This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
Resolution. From Steve Sedergreen, Ron Murray and Michael Jordan. A beautiful piece of music. And it's part of the art and beauty of deep listening. It's a project from Melbourne jazz pianist and teacher Steve Sedergreen. Now, he's been an integral part of the Melbourne jazz scene for over 25 years. He grew up in a musical environment where his father, who was Bob Sedergreen, was a professional jazz musician around Melbourne. And he took both Steve and his brother Mel along for the ride. It's my pleasure to welcome to the Bent Notes studio here at Joy 94.9, Steve Sedergreen.
Great to be here, David. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure to have you in studio, Steve. You've worked as a professional musician since your teenage years with your father, a professional musician around Melbourne. Was it a foregone conclusion that you would follow in his footsteps?
That's a really good question. I think so, yeah. Dad played with all the greats, you know. He played with Dizzy Gillespie, he did the big concert before Ella, you know. We had people, Natalie, people staying in our house. So I didn't decide to really play music till a lot later. I didn't know. I was, you know, could have been an engineer, I could have been something different. I was pretty good at school, but in my early teens I decided to start playing, and that was really my drive. I did have a really good mentor with Dad and my younger brother Mel. We just play music and we love it.
Did you play music when you were young, just so to speak, around the piano at home?
I just sort of mucked around a bit. That's really what I did. I didn't know what I was doing. It felt good, and good escapism, as some of us need to do in life. Next thing, you're performing, and we just went there. It wasn't like we played music at home. We actually didn't talk really much about music. There was a lot of music being played. But we lived in a very beautiful environment, and it was the environment, I think, that really got me going. You know, Dad would tour, we'd go around the country, we'd get in the car, and sometimes I remember he had so many keyboards, we couldn't even have suitcases, we had clothes all everywhere. There's five of us, there's my younger sister Tammy, and we just would travel, and Dad would do amazing concerts and play with all these great players. And I think in my teens, when he started playing with all these idols, that's what happened, I think that was a foregone conclusion for me.
And was that when you recognised what this thing music was all about? It wasn't just something to enjoy at home or watch Dad up on stage, that it was something that you could do and you could meet all these amazing people and produce some amazing music yourself?
Yeah, I think it was more sharing. I was very proud of my father. My father's a very giving man, still is. I was in the club last night, he was playing upstairs and I was playing with my brother downstairs. It was quite funny. He came down because we were playing later, and yeah, it was like reverse, you know, it was like I was giving back to him in some sort of way.
And, oh, that's beautiful.
So, yeah, look, he's a very kind and, you know, big, big soul. He's, you know, but also it gets down to, most of us, including myself, we learn at school, but he learned the hard way just through gigs and performing and
out on the road.
Out on the road, and we're part of that. And that's basically my story for me, you know. Here to this day, if I meet young people that love music or older people love music, I say it's a commodity. So that's how I say it. That's the commodity, not the other way around. So I love music, and I love when people express, everyone's different. My good friend Herbie Hancock, I could try to get many lessons off and always ask when, you know, people come into our house and I always ask, what's Mr. Hancock like? He said, oh, he's a top bloke and all this sort of stuff. But when I finally got to meet Herbie and I've stalked him a few times, he just say, Steve, it's about risk taking, which I love taking risks. But it's also look at the person's shoes. And that was basically, that's how I work. I look at people's shoes and just go from there. So that's
my way to do things.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit different. Sometimes I get in a little bit of trouble because I don't follow much structure, but it is structured in a different way. It's just probably things in a bit of reverse. And this journey with the deep listening with the two wonderful musicians I've been for a long time, because it's just not my project, it's their project as well, has been a building force, you know, creative force for me to express myself.
And we're going to learn more about that very, very shortly. My special guest here on Bent Notes tonight is Steve Sedergreen.
That Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
My special guest tonight is Melbourne pianist Steve Settergreen. Steve, did you learn anything from the greats that stayed with you as something special in terms of an influence for your career?
Yeah, of course. Everyone's saying before is a little bit different, and it depends how they give. You know, some people don't give much at all, and everyone's a little bit different. Most of the great players, and I'll never forget when I was in New York, you know, being sitting a couple of rows next to McCoy and Tyner, and not just a big note, you know, he would look at me and go, "Here you go, Steve, this is how you do it, right?" And so it's sort of like putting acid on you, like you've got to find a different way. And just it's normally in a loving way. Sometimes it's done in a very cool way. You know, in New York now it's very cool, you don't give much away. But the older crew are very, very very like that. They sort of give. You know, it's part of their personality, and especially if they're really extroverted piano players, you know, they're the ones I like, yeah, because I'm a bit of extrovert myself, you know. Some of us are a bit introverted, but they're the ones that I tend to get attracted to, and they give it to you, and then you ask questions afterwards and they're prepared to talk, you're pretty much on the mark, you know. Music's just a really, it's like a, to me, it's like a telepathic language. I don't want to use that word, but you sort of connect on some sort of other level. It's not an intellectual level, it's just, you just connect, and you know, sometimes it seems vague. Not that I'm that way, I don't think. You just connect on some level, and if it's really beautiful, then it's a beautiful thing to pass on to people.
You've led bands during your career, a number of bands, whether they be your own or others, but you've also been in a band with your brother Mel called Mistaken Identity.
Yes, it started right back to 20 years or so ago. So, yeah, and that's interesting. I played with Mel last night, so we're very different, two characters, and we do lots of workshops sometimes together, and we show different ways of doing. Even though we're connected as blood brothers, you know, we have different ways of doing things. But we have a connection. You know, we have a connection musically, and we've grown up together, so we understand stuff. So we share that with the audience, and I think it's really important that you have different ways of doing this, different ways of knowing. So sometimes we actually debate on stage, like we give that as well as part of the show. It's, you know, it's all comical, but We just work it together, and it's just great to play with him. He's an amazing saxophonist and musician. He plays. I only play the piano. I have one love, the piano, but he can play anything, that bro of mine. He's pretty special.
To be able to play one instrument is fantastic skill. To be able to play multiples, it always intrigues me that someone can do that.
Yeah, he comes in and goes, "Hey, Steve, I've written a song on the bass." I say, "I didn't even know you played the bass. And you bought this bass." And he's really, it's his creativity, and he likes composition and framing stuff. Whereas I'm the opposite. It's just like, let's see where we go. And that's where we get into fun on the stage. And we've got ways of managing that and having fun. Even in our later life, we still have a bit of fun on the stage like that.
Having fun is something that also happens at music festivals.
Certainly does.
Certainly from an audience member, you look around and you see all these musos up on stage. Most of the time they look as if they're having fun. They're not working.
Well, they're working, but they're not. They're working in a different framework. They're giving. You've got to give everything you've got. You give everything from your little toe if you're a great musician. Doesn't matter what style of music is. Well, they're free, so you do come off exhausted. But the great thing for us as musicians is we get to see musicians, you know, hang out very much, and you get to say, "How are you going? You know, and what's happened? What have you been up to?" You have this quick little conversation. And some of the musicians that I love very much, so fellow pianists, yeah, you know, we have this sliding door thing going, you know. Hey, where are you up to and stuff like that? So you make little notes, and sometimes you might celebrate too if you get a chance, which is even more fun after the performance. But the audience, that's what it's all about. They're part of they've got to be in tune what you're sharing. So my whole life musically now is sharing with my audience. Here's where I am. I've always been very open. This is what I did when I was in my 20s. This is what I do now. Getting close to 50 next year. This is what I'm doing now, and that's what I like to do.
Which is what your album Points in Time is doing. It was interesting to read the blurb inside that talks about your career over 25 years, and there's 12 pieces that cover that 25 years. We can hear your experience and your approach change over those 12 pieces.
Yeah, I think it develops. Look, I still think I've got the same voice. So it's funny, I'm not worried about, what I'm really wrapped about, one of my teachers, Mike Knox, playing after me afterwards. And I love Mike, you know. And when I was really young, I had all this stuff, Mike in the 50s, because it was big in Sydney. And, "Hey, Mike, check this out, you're playing 19." He said, "I don't want to know about that, Steve," right? Okay, that's cool. But for me, I don't mind sharing that, because that's part of, I think, what you do with recordings now. And working for that. I'm actually working back with some of the old Mistaken Identity stuff at the moment, trying to put that all together on an upcoming album. And I might share that with where I'm at now at the moment. So I like to give a bit of experience with that. And it's not about look at me, that's always just I like to share. That's my whole thing. What is in the moment, share it, give it, and love it, and commit to it, and hopefully people dig it as you're doing it.
When do you know it's time for a new project?
When you get restless, you know. So, you know, I like to think you've got to keep it innovating. So I'm really struggling with this thing. Is music, does it really come from your head to your fingers as a piano player, or does it come from your surroundings? And that's what I'm really working with. I think it's got to do with environment and a lot of things. So I've taught a lot as part of my career, which has been giving, and that's how a lot of my audience and like sharing. But I think I'm at the stage of my life where I want to now go explore this idea of that it's sensory. That's what I think music is to me. It can be both ways, but for me, that's where I'm trying to work with. It's not composition. It's just what it is. And if you're in tune with the audience and the audience in tune with the musicians, you get this great thing. That's why I call the project the Art and Beauty of Deep Listening. There's no name for the band. Michael Jordan, he's an amazing musician. He's been there right from the start. Ron Murray, I've known for a long time. And we don't say anything. We don't come prepared. There's nothing. There's no preparation. We just play. But normally afterwards we reflect in some sort of way that you go home and reflect. I don't tell you what to do. It's a very, very collaborative way of playing. We're trying to find that, you know, here with as Australian, I don't think we have this. There's no sort of groove or anything. It's just, it is this. And we're trying to say, we're Aussies, you know. I know Anthony's about being young and free, but I think we've been here for a long time. And I think that's part of what I'm trying to say and try to explore that as well.
So the deep listening component is an ability for the three of you on stage to be listening to what each other's doing and be creative about what's happening between the three of you at the same time without necessarily having charts written note for note, etc.
I don't do that. It's even better than that. It might to do with someone in the audience. So I think, David, you might have been now recognised because I didn't know who you were until today. And I was at we did big festivals. So I did the big Castle Main State Festival and they loved it. You know, I've done some radio live things where sometimes people cry, you know, like I get really excited about it, not because you've really touched them on some sort of level, because we're yearning for something that's beautiful and honest. And I think that's our culture, you know.
Was it last year that you performed, or this year you performed at Stonington?
This year.
At Chapel Off Chapel, wasn't it?
Chapel, and we had Rebecca Barnard, who grew up with Mike, and she did a few original compositions, so we just made it work. But it was basically, we listened to what's going on. We're on for 45, 50 minutes, whatever the concert is, and you play.
I remember it didn't feel that long.
No, it wasn't that long either.
We got towards the end and I thought, we've been shortchanged, and look at my watch. No, we haven't.
No.
It was amazing just to be in the audience and watch the group work and to hear the didgeridoo as well.
Well, that's what I came back to. It could be a conversation between the musicians, which normally happens with musicians, but I think it's to do with everyone in the room. And if they're in tune, that's the word, this thing, if we're all in tune because we go so fast, and that's what I'm trying to explore, that's what I'm trying to share with people. So it makes it really difficult because it's not a composition. Yes, it's improvisation, but it's something deeper, you know, and I'm not trying to be, you know, up myself or anything like that. It's just who I am, and this is what I want to try and explore from now on to where I go and see where that takes me musically.
Until it's time for the next project.
Yeah, until the next project, which could be anything.
So deep listening is the current project. I see on your website that you've got a deep listening concert, then you've got the Art and Beauty of Deep Listening at Wangaratta, and then you've got a deep listening to country. Are they different?
No, just different titles. So we have themes like a show. So sometimes there's a show called A Moment's Notice or The Perfect Moment or whatever it is. So we have theme. We don't have a name for the band. You know, we came across a word called Dadiri, which is a way of knowing up north. You know, it's like an Aboriginal concept word. But we don't want to use that word, you know, because we don't understand that word, you know. So, but for me, from my jazz, which I call my mother tongue, I think we listen the same way. So you mentioned Rob Burke before when he plays with his quartet, or Jan when she's doing her thing. They listen, they reciprocate listening. Is a direct connection rather than that sort of worked out. And so, or with the Herbie Hancock Chick Corea concert early in the year, I went nuts. So I was a little bit, I got up, my wife killed me because I said, I've got to get up high, the piano players. You've got to see from up above to see what they're doing. And the thing. But at the start of the concert, I was yelping, right, because I get very excited because they really saw connecting. I was a little bit toxic with a few, a bit of fun, and I wanted to go down and stop the concert. Hey, guys, are you listening with your head or are you listening with your mind? So I think it's listening with your heart. I think it's nothing new what we're trying to say, but the way we're presenting it might be different from what we've done before.
What can we expect to hear, and I think I know the answer to this, when we step into the hall at the Wangaratta Performing Arts Centre next Sunday, November the 1st at 4:30?
Well, we've got no idea. That's basically the first thing.
I thought that was the answer.
First thing, but I know it's going to be a beautiful concert. Ron tells these stories. He's searching his past, and we never know what the story is. And we've never heard the story.
Really?
So I think, I don't know how many times I play Ron. He came with another one. We did one recently at a jazz club called the Uptown. And it was a different story again. You know, like, and we go to Ron, don't tell us anything. And Mike comes up with stuff. Mike's amazing. He's just, he talks about more like drumming, and he's studying at Monash, and he's superb, you know. And just, we've got this kinesiology going like a band, but it's not framed in any particular way. And if you go back to any great jazz band like Miles Davis or the Keith Jarrett Band, yeah, they rehearse before the gig, but they don't play what they rehearse. They play what's in the moment. I think that's what I'm trying to chase. I'm not worried about the word jazz, improvisation so much, but that's the sort of thing we're going to do. And hopefully pull it off. If we don't, well, that's up to us to go again, back to the drawing board and find another way to do it. But the thing what I do is, like sport, I reflect after each performance and I practice the same stuff. So that's how I work it through, David. So it's a bit like sport. I practice the same routine, but then when I get to the moment, I have to trust that moment.
Well, we're trusting that next Sunday at Wangaratta, we're going to hear some amazing moments. If it's half as good as what we saw at Stonington Jazz earlier in the year, it'll be amazing. If it reaches up to where it was, and there's no reason why it won't, because you're in the Wangaratta Performing Arts Centre Hall, which is a beautiful space.
It is a beautiful space.
And now, you mentioned Mike Nock before. I saw him up there, I think it was 2 years ago, performing with Stephen Magnusson.
Oh, there you go.
And I was expecting a standard show. Well, they started, they finished 48 minutes later, and it was amazing just to sit there and become enveloped in this music. And
it's the same thing.
It's the same thing that I experienced at Chapel Off Chapel. Things start up, the audience is quiet, listening. Ron starts talking about something, and then obviously you guys just latch on and away you go.
Yeah, and it could start with me, it could start with Mike. We just don't know. We just get there and we just get all excited and make it work. But that's sort of real connection for me between my mother tongue jazz and that. So it's about surrendering to a moment, trusting a moment for me, and committing to the moment. That's all it is, and hopefully it works, and I'm sure it will be a wonderful concert. Especially if Mike's playing next year, I'll have to be on best behaviour.
Okay. You will indeed. I have no doubt it will be an amazing concert in Wangaratta Performing Arts Centre Hall next Sunday, the 1st of November at 4:30 in the afternoon. More details, wangarattajazz.com. And you also have a website, stevesettergreen.com.
That's me.
Lots of good stuff in there, Steve.
Oh, thank you. I'll try and keep that up to date as much as I can.
I was having a look through that during research this morning, and lots of great stuff to see.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve Settergreen, for joining me here in the Bent Note Studio tonight. Really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
We're going to have a listen to a piece of music shortly from your Points in Time album called The Pink Glove. Now, it's an interesting name. Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, I'm very young, and there's someone I really liked, and there's a glove, and I wrote a song about this glove. So that's it. So it's a very young Steve Settergreen, very young, and I love it. It's a bossa nova rhythm, which is where I started. I was born in 66. I like bossa nova, and got the fantastic Doug DeVries with me, who I'm very close to. You know, Doug and I don't play enough, but I'm very close to Doug, very close, and it's an amazing, beautiful track of music. So thank you for playing it today.
Our pleasure indeed. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.